Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals. Hello, welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and I have the pleasure of introducing to you Avi Loren Cohen. As the founder of a boutique strategic business consulting and executive business performance company, Avi Loren works with companies, CEOs, senior executives, and corporate board members from around the globe and from various industries, where he and his team provide their clients with the strategy, direction, training, and knowledge to overcome problems and challenges, meet professional and corporate goals and objectives, with a focus on short and long-term growth. Avi Loren has more than 25 years in international business, functioning in multiple senior roles in startups, established public and private companies. His knowledge and experience enables him to quickly and effectively turn companies around for long-term and profitable growth. He also acts as an advisor and board member to many companies and also volunteers for multiple North American nonprofit organizations where he helps young entrepreneurs to achieve their business dreams. Avi Loren, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much for having me.
I just wanted to share with my listeners, you know, I recently came to know Avi Loren, and he is very much a humble, thoughtful, highly energetic individual, because I think what he has to say in terms of business, leadership, mentoring, entrepreneurship, he's exceptionally passionate about. And so when we came to know each other, because I was looking for a highly inspiring guest for my pod show, we just hit it off right away. And I think as you listen to this conversation, my good fortune of having to get to know him as a business leader and somebody who sincerely wants to help entrepreneurs and help other people to grow, you're going to find this to be an amazing conversation. And again, welcome to the show, Avi.
Thank you.
So let's just get into this right now. What's really intriguing to me is who you are today is really rooted in your business journey. So I would really love to know a little bit about your business journey. And along the way, where do you think you've had the most impact?
Okay. You know, the first thing that always comes to mind is my father. You know, he's an avid businessman. He's very much an entrepreneur. He's a pioneer in many ways. And without realizing it, he ended up teaching me so many different aspects of business, of marketing, of sales, and all these types of things. And this is a guy that was in business since he's 16 and he's now 87 and still working. So that work ethic really passed on, that tenacity, that focus, that can-do attitude. You know, I'd probably make him blush if he were here, but that really was it. And he allowed me to go on the road with him at the age of 5, where I'd wake up at like 4:30 in the morning to be at his car in the dead of winter, waiting for him to go, you know, and then we worked till like 6 o'clock and I got to see all his clients. And that grew into, you know, going into trade shows at the age of 14 and bringing product lines to Canada. And then, you know, in the early 20s, I helped him restructure for a new company. And all these things gave me a lot of the pieces of knowledge that most people don't get unless they're in their parents' business, for example. So I was very fortunate to have that. And I was also attracted to that older generation, people much older than I. So I hung around that, went to all these business meetings. And that was really, if you had to think about it, that was the catalyst of, hey, that's where I want to be.
So very interesting. And your introduction about your business journey is different than others. And I really like the message that you bring out of this. Being impressionable, allowing or being a youth and being exposed to business at such an early age. You know, so often we think about, okay, youth goes to school, they go to work, they might have some athletics, but sometimes we miss an opportunity exposing them to real world. And you had the good fortune of your family and your father taking you into a business environment. And another thing I really, really find interesting about what you said is bridging the gap between generations, because we do see things differently, and that's to be expected. But sometimes exposing youth to a generation or two can give them insights and help jumpstart their career and their lives ahead. So that's a fantastic story about your journey.
Thank you.
So, you know, let's go on a little bit here. I find that when I look at your bio, and I spent a little bit of time, well, you are a strategic coach for businesses. You really, really focus on the entrepreneur and that mentorship. It comes through every single position you've had, and you're an advisor and currently participate in several startup and entrepreneurial ventures. Why or how is it that you are attracted to that startup and entrepreneur and youth space?
I have to probably equate it to that hunter mentality, the hunter and the farmer mentality. So I hope there aren't any accountants listening because they might get offended, but I don't mean to offend anybody like this. But if you look at people that are more than 9 to 5, very structured, more adverse to risk than not, kind of like accountants, it's very systematic, very logical. Not to say that entrepreneurship isn't logical, but you know the path. There's a path. Entrepreneurship, you know, a lot of people ask me, can you teach someone to be an entrepreneur? To some degree, you can. But I really do believe that you either have that in you or you don't. And it's interesting in my case, I don't know if my father weren't who he was and I wasn't surrounded by all the entrepreneur behavior, would I still have that in me? Or did he, you know, rile the juices of entrepreneurship in me that says that, oh, I want to be that, I want to experience that, I want to do that? I don't know. In my case, I'm really not sure. But I do think more so than not, you have to have that personality of entrepreneurship. I mean, you can see some people who are, you know, very shy, very introspective, you know, tend not to be, you know, sales, marketing, PR, communications, advertising. They tend not to be in that area. They're like the inside people, if you will. The outside people, I mean, they're almost like ADD people. They're hunters. They're constantly in those fields. Probably about 70%+ of people in those fields are of ADD background, which is interesting because they have that hunter mentality. So for me, what brought me into that actually was the challenge. Some people would call it the gamification of it, because in a sense, you are gamifying everything. If I do this, it could be that. That's, you know, sort of reward. But to me, you're wearing different hats. You've got all these different challenges. You're building something from nothing and then creating something. That's a very cool achievement. You know, startups are not races. They're really marathons. They're arduous, painful marathons. So you've got to have a lot of grit, and you got to have, you know, a lot of tenacity, a lot of commitment, all those types of things without getting into it deeply. But that's kind of like what I am. So I'll be quite selective with whom I work with, the type of project it is, and all other factors. But I love that journey. That's really exciting.
You know, you bring up something as I'm taking lots of notes during our conversation. You talk about, you know, so often in education and business, we're kind of taught to operate very binary with structure, et cetera. And then when you have a person that's kind of all over the place, we label them as either a troublemaker or a nonconformist. But, you know, I often think, shouldn't we be pushing entrepreneurship a little bit deeper into our education system or even early in our careers? Because so often, you know, they might teach a course in college and a few people will jump all over it, but I don't think everybody truly understands it. And if we're all over the place, we are told we can't focus. We're not structured. We're not going to go anywhere with these crazy and wild ideas. So really cool concept, which does bring me to a question. When you have all of your services in your website, there was a very interesting one that I found, and you touched on it, about ADD and ADHD coaching. I have never, ever seen that before. I've seen standard coaching services. Why and how has this become to be a service within your business?
Well, first of all, I didn't start off to be a coach. I actually am a business consultant first that specializes in business strategy. So as a business strategist, it's very specialized. There aren't a lot of people, apparently, say apparently because this is what the research showed me, that can basically look at a company and very quickly understand it, understand the marketplace and all the dynamics, macro, micro, and then come up with a strategy to do whatever the client's objectives are. So that was interesting. And because I'm able to do that quite quickly and effectively, what would happen is I would basically be able to deliver the, let's say, the direction, the results, and so forth to the CEO of the company. And with that, they would have the task of implementing and executing that strategy. So from the top down, the more layers you would go down, the more problems you'd see. So from the CEO, it's communicated to the next level. It's like that game of broken telephone. It's kind of like that. So for me in consulting, and it's like in anything I do, I try not to do things that I think I'll fail in. That being said, there are some things that you have to risk. You might fail and you've got to do anyway. So I try to do the best that I can. So there's a balance between the two. But when it comes to consulting, I really don't like taking on clients that I can't fulfill their expectations. I don't like taking clients where, you know, I'll fail in some way, shape, or form, be it my fault or their fault. and I don't like it's their fault. So for me, what happened was there are some clients who in the execution process, they made some errors. And when I looked at that, because I stayed in touch with these clients, and I said, okay, so let's review. Now, this is after I got paid, after the whole thing, I still follow up to make sure, right? So at that point, I find out, okay, so there's some issues here. And the first layer of this is where the coaching came in. And I realized, okay, they need training, they need communication training, they need team dynamic training, they need a whole bunch of training, including sales and biz dev and so forth. And what ended up happening was I would go back into the company a little bit and then say to the CEO, let me do this for free. Let me just get them back aligned and get this, you know, plan execution going properly. And that then turned into, wow, you're amazing. You know, can you do this? You know, can we pay you to do this? And I'm like, okay, all right. So that then merged into, you know, the coaching, the training, and the mentoring. And the more and more I'm doing this, and more I'm working with startups, which accounts for about between 20 to 35% of the business, depending on what time of the year for some reason, you find there's a large group of people in entrepreneurial roles in sales, marketing, PR, communications, like I said, and entrepreneurship and all this stuff that are ADD and ADHD, meaning the hyperactivity side of it. So what is happening is because I've done this before for the non-professionals, I'm already used to the behaviors and used to all these types of things that they go through and so forth and the challenges. And happened so that I was working with, you know, people that have that background, and it didn't occur to me to offer that type of training for the professional. But, you know, it happened once, it happened twice, it happened three times, and saying, okay, there's a trend here. There's a very big trend here, and there's a very big need here. Things like time management, delegation, prioritization, listening. The biggest issue with ADD people is listening. A few things happens. A, they interrupt often, they lose track, and they go ahead. See, when they're communicating to somebody, they can't stay focused. So I developed a new way of communicating between ADD people and non-ADD people, as well as ADD to ADD. And it's called Cortis Around. Okay? And the idea is because they think fast and have generally less attention span than non-ADD people, and this changes based on every individual, of course, I basically look at it like this. You have a funnel, and the funnel's why. That's the surround. That's the story. And it comes down to the end where you get to the point, right? Some people say to you, just get to the point, right? But I created a system to this whole thing and an understanding of why this happens. So without getting into a long thing about this, basically I realized ADD people process differently the way they communicate and the way they receive information. So perception and reality are very specific to individuals, and that plays havoc on ADD people. So that was a really interesting epiphany in the coaching, consulting, and training side of the business, which I then took on and said, you know what, there is a lot of need for this. And a lot of people were saying to me, you should make something. You should create this as part of your offering. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. And that's what started it.
Yeah, it's so interesting what you say about that. Sometimes I know when I first started out as a consultant, I said, I'm going to do this content, and this content. And then I was getting ready to start producing all this stuff and the services. And then I said, wait a second, I don't have any clients. So, you know, what's the use of doing this? But then as you journey with your clients, you find out really what their needs are, and they benefit and you benefit by new services and offerings. And I really love the other thing you talked about. It's really kind of a translator or bridging the gap. We embrace these people that are ADD, ADHD, or just immensely creative people with all these ideas. I used to think of them as troublemakers and I had to manage them. On the other hand, we have to embrace them and the creativity and the go-to attitude. But sometimes we need that translator, that thing that massages what they're trying to do into finite things to execute, and then to help the people understand how to work with them versus having to try to manage them. So beautiful. Very, very interesting work.
Well, that's the important part what you just said. In the communication and diversity training that I do, I actually teach teams and companies and CEOs to understand individuals, because what people tend to do is they look at the person and they assume. They make tremendous assumptions. And I always say to assume is to err. So when you're looking at a person, it's like the book and the cover scenario. So you look like a quote unquote normal person. I can speak to you and blah, blah, blah. But I really don't know you at all, right? Technically, I don't know what made you who you are today. And every person has some sort of mental issue, ADD, OCD, ABCD, whatever you want to call it. They got something going, right? It could be chemical. It could be situational. Everybody's got something. There's no perfect person that I've ever seen in my life yet. And therefore, because everybody has something below the surface, people don't take that into account. And one of the biggest things they don't understand is what drives a person to behave the way they do. So if you take an example, I have an individual that I'm working with He's bipolar, ADD, he's 26, and ironically only started socializing at the age of about 21. So he has social norms and understandings that don't exist. He's got the ADD, the impulsivity. He's got an aggressivity angle to him also. And he can flip-flop literally from happy to sad in seconds. How do you manage a person like that, right? But you also got to understand when he gets angry, it's not actually angry. He's getting emotional. That's how he shows his emotions. So the average person will get all, you know, bent out of shape and get all, you know, respect issues and, you know, talk to me like that instead of understanding. And everybody's taking it personal. Everybody's not listening to the person. There's an old saying that says, don't get caught in the delivery. Listen to the content. And in this case, the delivery is the problem. And, you know, it happens like that in companies also. It's not just that. It's how they process the information. So if you said something to an ADD person, if they didn't come to that point of what they need to walk away with quickly, they've lost you. Now, they're going to try to show a nice face and they're going to try. But when they walk away, guess what? They're looking to somebody else. Did you understand him? They don't want to, you know, get embarrassed. So they try to do certain things and then they call the boss or their superior and say, you know, I missed this out. They have constant gaps in their knowledge. It's not because they're stupid, because they're bored out of their skull. So if you can speak to an ADD person and tell them, it's kind of like golf. You have the ball, you have the tee. Here's where we're going to hit the ball from, right?
Yeah.
And tell me, where are we going to hit the ball to? Where's the flag and where's the hole? So if you tell an ADD person, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play golf. You're going to hit the ball from here. You're going to get the ball there. Right away, you can calculate, I got to go there. I'm going to navigate a path to go there. It's the same thing verbally. I need to talk to you about your behavior. Okay, he's talking to me about behavior. Now I frame the discussion. Here's the problems with your behavior, A, B, C, and D. No more than three generally, but bang it up very quickly. And you want to basically tell him stuff very quickly so when he walks away, he's got it.
I'm writing a mathematical equation here because you got me thinking here. You know, we talk about improving communication skills and you send people to classes and you get them coached and mentored. You got to improve your communication. But under that is actually a mathematical formula. It is some function of empathy and messaging. Empathy shows the human connection that you've made with the individual, and messaging is the intent for the impact. Spoke to a recent podcast, intent and impact are different. So we need to work on our messaging and have empathy and to have more effective communication.
Absolutely.
Beautiful point. So I'm going to take it in another direction here. One of the things that I picked up from some of your content was you like to work in a space from transitioning a startup CEO to a true CEO. And I would love to know your perspective on what qualifies a startup CEO and what is it that we can see in their characteristic that you say, you know what, they're a true CEO. I'd love to know more about that.
Okay, so first of all, there's a variety of scenarios that I work with. A lot of times, startup, we'll call them founders in this case. The good startups have more than one partner. In a startup, and you only have one person, it's very difficult to succeed. We won't get into it, but it's much better to have co-founders. And that's why there's this big thing about getting co-founders, and there's online resources to get that. Within that, then you have usually the person who founded the concept or the project is the one that generally tends to say, well, I'll be the CEO. Sometimes if they're the technical founder, they say, you know, I'll be the CTO. Either we'll find someone or you be the CEO. In any event, though, most of them don't tend to have CEO backgrounds. Most of them don't have C-level experience, for that matter. So it's very different in a CEO to be a leader. And this really comes a lot about leadership. When we're looking at, you know, these types of individuals, there's two things we're doing. We're working with people who understand early on that this is going to work, the startup's going to happen, hell or high water, this is going to make it, I'm doing it, no matter what. But I got to have someone there to help me move into the role of CEO slash leader. There are others that are in the role. They don't realize they need the help. And then they get bogged down from a variety of issues. There's too many to list, but whatever, something comes out. Sometimes someone tells them, need a little help in this. There aren't classes that teach people how to be a CEO, basically. So you need that experience. So there's one or two ways that I'm working with people. One, train them to become the CEO slash leader. And two, they're in the role and helping them become that leader and CEO that they want to be and that they need to be. So that's the first thing. The good leaders are the ones that are quite collaborative, but understand that they're still the leader. So collaborative means you listen, of course, to other people's input. And you know, the old saying about find people smarter than you absolutely applies. So getting good people on your team, finding those people is a problem to find. If you're an early stage or if you're in a startup, it's hard because you don't have an HR team. You can't usually afford to hire some company to come in at whatever fee it is and find that person. So you've got to be the best CEOs are the ones that can go and pick those types of people out. So if you could find those people, how do you bring them in? Especially if you don't have the funds early on, the biggest strategy you have to think about is how do we get people to work for nothing or virtually nothing or work on a pipe dream, which is I'll give you equity, right? And if anybody's smart, they'll always say, yeah, well, you know what? The potential of equity being worth something doesn't pay my bills. The bank doesn't accept potential equity is the old story, right? And as consultants, we get that offer all the time, right? So this is a game, and you know, I kid around as a game, but it really is a super important thing to understand because you're doing some major, major things. You're inspiring people. And you know, some people say, I'm not selling, I'm telling. I'm telling you how great this project is. I'm telling you why this will succeed. I'm explaining the strategy, explaining the opportunity, yada, yada. So you're speaking with prospective investors. How do you, you know, communicate with prospective investors as the CEO and co-founder or founder of a company? It's very different from somebody on the team that is, you know, just on the team or even on the core team. It's very different. So we teach them how to communicate, how to present themselves. There's a change in how people even dress nowadays. There used to be the expression called dress for success. But, you know, you have Zuckerberg at Facebook who will go to a board meeting in a hoodie. So out the window goes dress for success and more so, you know, dress, you know, nicely, dress cleanly. Just try not to affect many people or offend many people in your appearance in a sense. But that day is gone. It's now being effective communication, effective inspiration, very strategic minded, very data oriented, but yet being very creative in your ability to, you know, basically present the opportunity and inspire people. People don't come on into a company, especially early on, if you can't inspire them. It's hugely important. Great leaders can inspire people. Think of presidents that inspire people. Obama, whether I'm not saying I'm for him or not, I'm just saying Obama inspired a generation of people, I mean, through his passion and his intellect and so forth. But it was that passion. If you look at a lot of VCs and angel investors and so forth, one of the early things I look at is the passion. I want to see the passion in the founders because the passion translates to longevity, translates to grittiness, and translates to tenacity and commitment. Passion is what's going to keep them there when the chips are down, when they're getting egg in their face, and the marathon is just like they're hitting the wall. That's what they're looking for. So a leader must have that.
So you got me thinking. Passionate individuals, inspiration that have the vision and the wherewithal to realize maybe they need some support. And you talk about co-founder because obviously each one has to be strong and support the final vision. But you have the one that kind of naturally, as you say, comes to the point of being a CEO, the messenger, the inspiration, as you say, when the chips are down, we keep moving forward. But then you talk about finding the right co-founder. And it's a really interesting concept. And while you are equal, however legally you've established the equality of it, what then are those characteristics of the co-founder that's not a lesser role, but then supports the one that represents the CEO of the company? What does that look like?
Super good question, actually. just before I get into that, I just want to add something. Passion is an overstated word in psychology and business and other places. And to connect to the prior discussion that we had, the topic-wise, we talked about communication and perception. There are people that their chemistry is such that they don't appear passionate. They don't have that high energy. And a lot of people misinterpret that for lack of passion. I've had a client like that who often thought that people didn't get him because they didn't realize he's passionate, very passionate. He's also from an accounting background, but he's passionate. And at the beginning, I was even fooled. But sometimes you can't look at a person's behavior. You got to look at their actions. And actions, as they say, always speak louder than words. So just keep in mind, when I said passion is not about hoo-ah, rah, that it's also their actions. What have they done? So you got to look at that as well, because they may not have that visible passion. Okay, switch gears. Okay, so in terms of co-founders, actually, ironically, the story goes, I'm going to give you a story of the same person I'm talking about, ironically. But a lot of founders make massive errors finding co-founders. There's that issue of shares, of vesting periods, cliffs, all these types of phrases when it comes to share structure. Best done prior to, you know, as early as you can. You want to structure that. But finding people as a co-founder, I think of it that you must look at that person as your spouse in a sense. And I'll give you the reasons why. You're going to be spending more likely than not, probably as much or more time, especially in the early stages, with that individual. And it's imperative that you are compatible. And I'm not saying find a person of the same mind. Au contraire, that is not good because you won't have diversity and you won't have enough dynamics. You need someone that's going to challenge you, right? But in terms of core values, so for example, early on, those co-founders set the culture of the company. So you have to find people that value those same cultural values that you have. So let's say, for example, you know, let's say one of the co-founders was a geeky, nerdy person, and he experienced being picked on as a young age. You would imagine that that person might value people who are respectful and aren't sarcastic, don't put people down, don't use negative humor, don't make fun of people. That would be probably a very untolerated area of communication for them. So in their minds, it would be likely that they would want to, you know, do that especially. And that's not just for those people, it's anybody. You don't want that in a company. So, you know, one of my startups, we have a policy that says you can criticize anything and anyone. However, firstly, you've got to do it in the most respectful way. And you've got to do it in a way that's not hurting the person in terms of this is his chemistry. You know, so let's say the person's ADD, hypothetically. Just because they're ADD, you can't say and say, listen, your ADD brain is screwing up, blah, blah, blah. That's not what it is. So if you know the person's time management issues are a problem and you know it's probably because of ADD, you can't say, go get some meds. You can't say, go get some therapy. You can say, look, for example, Joe, you know, we need to work on some time management skills for you. I'd like to help you, or I thought of some ideas, some solutions, maybe some software. That approach, working with the person, not confronting the person. You know what I mean? So it's productive. It's moving things forward. Second thing, if you have a problem, you better have a couple solutions, because don't just come and complain to the team. Be productive. Make it meaningful, make it memorable, and make it impactful. That principle that I have should go everywhere in the startups, including that. So cultural values from communication is one very good example, how you interact, how you speak, that type of thing. And there are others, of course. So finding that co-founder that values this truly, number one, that's the first thing. Because you can find people with skills, but you can't find people that have those value systems that you need so badly, because that will make the difference between you divorcing short-term versus even long-term. So that is number one. Then, of course, that they feel it. So I work with, if they're trying to pitch, discuss, or work with an investor, a founder, a co-founder, whatever it is, if the person doesn't get it, don't push. Don't push. You've got to get it. If you don't understand why this is great and you have to hard sell, it's one thing if the person's capacity of the knowledge or the technology, whatever it is beyond them, then you could explain it. And if they get that, now I get it, that's okay. But if you're pushing them in the way that, listen, they just don't see the value of cloud technology. They just don't get it. To them, it's like everything's on paper, you know, for example. You're not going to convince that person. Leave them there. It's okay. There are other people. So the person not only should get it, but they should then have also the same passion. They should be in that same space as you. Now, you can't expect exactly the same space, but within one rung outside, one deviation. And the final thing is commitment. So founders are supposed to be the people that will be there no matter what. When everybody else is playing, when everybody else is sleeping, when everybody else is doing whatever, the founders are the ones that are doing the crap, that are digging the car out of the snow. They're doing the dirty work. And when people come together, you have to expect that. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that. And I've seen this time and time again, where they expect this from a person without thinking it, without processing that knowledge. And then when time comes and they say, well, where are you? Well, I can't. You better do it. Or I don't want to do that. Well, what do you mean? You're a co-founder. Anyway, those are the key things.
You know, this is fantastic because, again, I'm an entrepreneur. I am passionate or intensely positive about the work that I'm doing. And you even have me thinking about co-founder. Again, still trying to replace the salary, still trying to grow my name and et cetera. But, you know, it can never be too early to think about the concept, because you never want to think of, oh my gosh, I need a co-founder now because it's too big. But having that mindset maybe from the beginning or early on, you can kind of start dating potential co-founders and finding people that, to your point, is it a marriage that's going to work based on values and being able to know how to confront each other professionally as you continue to grow what it is that you're growing. So beautiful story. And this is an angle that I haven't heard a lot about, you know, working and establishing and helping businesses realize when and why you need a co-founder, because if done right, it can really help you achieve your goals in your business.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the old expression, two heads are better than one, really applies.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be your spouse. My spouse and I talk about business a lot, but we have different views because we're in different spaces. I do consult, but you know what? I got somebody else in mind who maybe should be a co-founder with me. So beautiful, beautiful conversation. So Avi Loren, before we bring this in, I want to just give you an opportunity. Is there anything else that a nugget, a piece of wisdom, a lesson learned, or something you've seen in business or a pattern you'd really like to share with others so they can learn before we bring this in?
Yeah. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned in terms of people moving ahead, especially in startups, you know, I said it quickly earlier, but just keep this in mind, to assume is to err. And I call that Murphy's Law. You know, Murphy's Law really says, if you don't cover your bases, if you don't double check and you leave that gap, wham, you're going to get whacked on the behind, of course. And that's on that assumptive level. It doesn't hurt to double check, take that extra time. It's the same thing with assumptions. Don't assume. Double check. And that goes for everything. When you're communicating with somebody, if somebody says something, confirm. So you mean this and that. Is that correct? Take that extra little step. It's not being seen as unintelligent or lack of intelligence or that you can't hear a process. It's about making sure you understand each other. Don't assume. You will make errors.
You know, trust but verify in my world, but this is more on the human level. To assume is to err. So beautiful piece of wisdom. So this has been a fantastic conversation. Your energy is amazing. And I really, really love the angle of, you know, I find you very unique. Yes, you're a strategic consultant. You help businesses reach their strategic objectives. But I really enjoy your passion or sincere interest in the startups and helping them understand what it is to be an entrepreneur, a startup. What do they need to consider to be successful? And I really love bringing them from being just a startup CEO to really the one that's going to lead it forward as a true CEO. So beautiful messaging. And thank you so much. So if people wanted to connect with you and learn more, because I know they will, how best can they find you?
Do a Google search if you like, Avi, A-V-Y, Loren, L-O-R-E-N, Cohen, C-O-H-E-N. That's also the website, AviLorenCohen.com.
All right. This has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for being on the Drop-In CEO podcast and wish you success. And this has been fantastic.
Thank you, Lyco. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. For more information about our consulting or coaching services, please visit my website at dropinceo.com or visit our Drop-In CEO Facebook group to continue the conversation. Now go out, lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.